Good afternoon and welcome, Dr. Basil.
Thank you.
Looking at the tie, I think I should say something like, good grief.
Charlie, you're not going to get along.
That's good. Well, first of all, thank you for being here and applying for this. We'll have you do your opening statement in just a minute here. After that, we'll have questions from the council and about 5 minutes left in the 45 minutes that we have together. We'll have you wrap up with a closing statement as well. So, again, thank you for being here, and the floor is yours.
Okay, do I have to sing or anything to make sure this works okay? Or
if you want to.
Last time you might have.
Would people warn me to? My wife, my first wife, is sitting directly back here. So if she starts groaning or whatever, just ignore her.
Oh, okay. She's already shaking.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. She'll shake it more. But, who am I? I'm Dr. Robert Basil. Grew up on a farm near Sauk Center, so I should get 1 point for being of agricultural, one agricultural point anyhow. Grew up in Sauk Center and subsequently attended the university, eventually became a physician. And my professional life has been spent in practice in Starbuck, Minnesota as a family physician. I'm something of a renaissance family physician. I still do obstetrical care, C-sections, appendectomies, tonsillectomies, all those kinds of things that a lot of family docs don't do anymore. So I've been out there since 81, 33 years or so, 34 this year, I guess. Along the way, I've been involved in a lot of professional medical organizations. I first joined the Minnesota Medical Association back in 1975, I believe. Was the first medical student or resident to serve on the MMA Board of Directors. That was many years ago. Spent a lot of work with the Minnesota Academy of Family Physicians. Served a number of positions there as their president. Served as the Minnesota delegate to the AAFP for several years. Dr. Rogers can probably fill you in on that and whether I served appropriately or not, because he happened to be there at the same time I was. After doing that for a few years, they got tired of me at the AAFP, and they elected me to be a delegate to the American Medical Association House of Delegates. I did that for about 6 years. So been active in a lot of medical organizations over the years. Locally, been chief of medical staff and various other things within the community. I've been active in the Lions Club, serving as its president. I've spent the last 12 years as their tail twister. Been a life member of the BFW, American Legion, and over the years have had some recognition in a number of different ways. The Minnesota Academy of Family Physicians, I was the Minnesota Family Doctor of the Year in 1994. I received their Merit Award. I've served as a instructor and was once named the Rural Physicians Associate Program Preceptor of the Year for teaching medical students. I've been listed as a quote, inspiring physician, end quote, on the Minnesota Medical Association website. And I'm not sure what that means because I usually am not, I don't think of myself as being inspiring. But, this past summer, I was named by the University of Minnesota Medical Alumni Society as a distinguished medical alumnus. It's quite a prestigious award, I felt. A year ago this week, I was presented with a national award by Staff Care, which is a locum tenens organization. staff care every year recognizes one physician as their National Country Doctor of the Year. And a year ago this week, I was bestowed that honor. It was first announced in USA Today, including the international edition, as well as Parade Magazine. Perhaps more importantly, this past year also, due to a lot of work that my wife and I have done locally in the community, Vicki and I were named Grand Marshals of the Starbuck Heritage Days Parade. And that's that. So that gives you a little idea about what I've done in the past. What do I know about the university? Well, I graduated from high school in 1967, and you can do the math. I'm 67 years old. And, but from 1965 through 1981, a total of 16 years there, I was a student at the University of Minnesota, except for a couple of years that I took out to a little vacation in Southeast Asia called Vietnam. That included undergraduate work. My medical school was at the university. My family practice residency was at the university. So I did spend probably a total of 14 years actually as a student there. I did have the opportunity along the way to actually work in the renal hemodialysis unit at the university as well. And was involved with a lot of the fun things going on in medicine with Dr. Najarian, doing some research into hemodialysis transplantation of the very small infants, some of those kinds of things. When I went into practice in 1981, I immediately became a clinical instructor also in the Department of Family Medicine at the university. And ultimately, they promoted me to clinical assistant professor as well. Pay was the same. No, they doubled it. Well, it was the same either way. clinical teaching at the university is all voluntary. But from 1981 to the present, I've been teaching high school students, college students, medical students, anybody who'll listen to me. So in essence, from 1965 to the present, so it'll be 50 years this year, I've been an active part of the university. Along the way, I've owned and operated some medical practices, including approximately 10 years ago when our hospital closed, I ended up having to start a practice from scratch. Certainly, this gave me an understanding of financing and developing an organization from the ground up. Took about $1 million in savings and loans to be able to get that off and running. In a small community, that was a half an investment in the community, but it worked. Along the way, I've been involved with various hospitals and provided what input I could from the medical perspective on the financing of those organizations. Some 20 or 30 years ago, I actually was a corporate convener for a health maintenance organization, HMO, in Minnesota. Basically, I started that organization called the Minnesota Primary Care Network. The intent of this was to start an HMO run by family docs with emphasis on rural Minnesota. Eventually, that developed a contract or a partnership with the University of Minnesota. Ultimately, it was called U Health Partners, and it was marketed as such. There were some financing problems along the way that led to its demise eventually, and it had to do a lot with the way Medicare was paying providers in rural areas. It was a very discriminatory kind of thing. We ended up with a lot more Medicare patients than non-Medicare patients, and it just didn't work out in the end. But it was a very learning experience. Again, starting an organization, a multi-million dollar organization, as it turned out, from the ground up, and basically understanding every part of that organization. I do have some understanding of accounting principles, financial statements, and so forth. As I mentioned to Joey earlier, I started the university as a math major. I have a knack for numbers. Ultimately, my bachelor's degree was in biometry, which does include a lot of biostatistics, so a lot of math in my background. Certainly, looking at some of the dollar data at the university, you know, it's a, what, a $4 billion budget or very close to that this year. That's a lot of dollars. University is, you know, a real jewel in this state. And I guess I'd like to be a regent to try to keep that jewel polished, to try to keep it as strong as it has been. The $4 billion budget looks like it's going to include about $600 million in state revenues. $600 million is a lot of bucks. That's a lot of tax dollars. If there's 4 million people in Minnesota or thereabouts, that's $150 for every Minnesota resident this year. And I think the regents have a mandate to make sure that the citizens of Minnesota get a fair return on their dollar for that $150. I don't know why I want to be a regent. I thank all of you for being here today, except for the senators. Most of you are not being paid for being here.
Actually.
and, you know, thank you for your service. I mean, you can each ask yourselves, why are you here today? I think it's all because we care. We care about what we're doing. We care about the university. We want to make the world a better place. And I think we have personal attributes. Yeah, I care about life. I care about Minnesotans. I care about people. I think as a regent, I think it's important that you have somebody who is a critical thinker, who can really look at an issue and not always follow the crowd. There are times, well, I will look at a subject totally different than everybody else, just so that somebody looks at it from the other side of the aisle. And I don't know how much information you got, but one of the anecdotes that I had submitted originally in my application had to do with just that. You know, an issue where it seemed like there's only one way to vote on a subject, and I came up with a different way to vote on it, and it worked. Physicians are problem solvers. Every 15 minutes or 10 minutes or half hour, whatever it is we get, we have another problem we need to solve. So I figure in the last 35 years, I've probably solved close to 500,000 problems. Hopefully most of them correctly. Anyhow, that's who I am. What do you need to know about me?
All right. Thank you very much. Harriet.
Sure. Well, welcome, and thank you for that very informative opening. My question really is going to focus a little bit on decision-making style. And you've talked a little bit about critical thinking, so I want to follow down that line of questioning for a moment. Tell me about, let's just say in the last 10 years, the most difficult decision that you were faced with, and how you approached making that decision and the outcome.
My own personal worst decision or toughest decision that time was when our hospital closed, because that was about 10 years ago. Basically, this is a hospital that was the first hospital west of the Twin Cities, opened in 1898. not the original building, but the hospital had been there for that long. And economically, was no longer feasible. And economically, my prior clinic had merged with that institution. They're going to close the building, close the institution, close the organization. And in my mind, the question was, well, shucks, now what do I do? I was 55, whatever at the time, 57. Hey, I can retire. You know, maybe I can join the senior PGA golf tour or something. It was a realistic, I mean, not the senior PGA tour, but retirement was realistic. <then. laughs> And I really had to struggle. In the end, I decided that the community had been supportive of my practice in the past. I think they appreciated me being there. And I thought I owed something to the community. So at that point, yeah, with some reticence on my wife's part, I went to the bank and started borrowing money this way and that way. And actually, it was New Year's Day 10 years ago this week that the local cement crew and I were out there pouring footings for my new building. I think that was a tough decision for me. Was it altruistic and all those good things? Were they doing it for somebody else? Yeah, in a lot of ways I was. But in the end, I felt a lot better about that than I would have walking away from the community. I think in the last 10 years, that was probably the toughest decision I had.
I think that provides us with a little bit of insight into how you approach problem solving and decision making. So thank you.
Thank you. Lois.
Doctor, you have been a rural physician. We have had a previous candidate make reference to the changes in Greater Minnesota, where instead of being Greater Rural Minnesota, it has become deeply rural and regional centers. And being from Greater Minnesota and from a small town and a farm outside a small town, that assessment would fit by my lens. And with my lens, I would say it fits Starbucks. And so I'd like to ask you two questions. Number one, you have been a clinical professor for the university for 50 years. Does the university simply take your services in that way, or do they appreciate your services and simultaneously ask just as strongly for your insight on what their medical training process needs to be to serve a greater Minnesota circumstance? That's the first question. The second one is, I would like to ask you to take this opportunity to wax fairly eloquently from the heart and the mind on what you would like to see at a point of transition in the medical and ACH, AHC, center at the university with regards to what healthcare needs to look like in Greater Minnesota and what the university's role, training 70% of those providers, ought to be in that analysis and in that service delivery. So are they drawing upon you over the last 50 years? And whether they are or whether they aren't, please tell us what you would like to see for your kind of a practice and where you think healthcare is going.
Okay. I've never been good at waxing eloquent, but I will attack this. So, yeah, is the university taking from me? all this free time that I'm providing, you can look at it that way, but I mean, the word doctor in Latin means to teach. So I think physicians have an obligation to do that, and it's been a pleasure to do that. Have students learned more from me than I from them, perhaps, but I've learned a lot from them.
Thank you. Now, that isn't the path I was going on. What I meant is the university as a medical training institution seeking your insight as you are training those students?
They do. And I was waxing too lengthy on the first part of that. Jim Bolger at the university in Duluth, for instance, is their assistant dean of medical affairs or something. I don't know what his title is. But he is always very interested in what I'm perceiving that students are lacking in. They want my input, you know, are these students ready to come out to a rural area in their third year of medical school? Are they ready by the end of that to start thinking about residencies and so forth? What skills are they not being exposed to? Yes. The main university, I'm just trying to think of individuals I've talked to there. I have along the way, and certainly they're very open and interested. Various residency directors over the years, as I've tried to recruit people to rural Minnesota, I provided feedback also. The greater feedback I've probably provided is that why can't you train these people? That, you know, rural Minnesota is a good place to practice. I think, yeah, the university has been very open about my input that way. What do I see as a healthcare needs in rural Minnesota? There is a tendency, yes, to consolidate a lot of areas in rural Minnesota. Healthcare, in particular, is going that way. The hospital I originally practiced in had 19 beds, and we provided excellent care there. Yet, there were years that I was the only physician actively admitting patients to that hospital, meaning that I was on call for that emergency room 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I did that for many months. You got to be a little stubborn to do that. Younger people have gotten wiser or whatever and realize they don't want to live that lifestyle. You know, if you have to take call like more than one weekend every couple of months, younger docs feel they're being abused. A lot of the medium-sized hospitals, Alexandria, Wilmer, size facilities, have a physician in the hospital doing hospitalist care all the time. So it's gotten, so a lot of docs who prefer the 8-to-5 lifestyle can do that in those facilities. In a much smaller community, it's harder. Somehow we need to keep doctors in rural communities. So when our hospital closed, the hospital patients were going to end up going to is 25 miles away. And every time they make that trip, it's 50 miles. There's 10,000 people in the county. Each one makes four trips a year. Yeah, multiply that out. Suddenly you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars that they're spending just on travel, much less the risky time frame of traveling in those communities. So I think somehow we need to make it so doctors have a decent lifestyle, but yet they can practice in a very small community and provide a service to that community. I don't know when the governor will be coming to Lake Minnewaska for opening day fishing, but someday he will. And when he does, I hope there's a doc there to take care of him. I hope he doesn't have to go 25 miles, 50 miles, or 75 miles to that hospital.
Thank you. Margaret?
My question is probably a good follow-up to Lois's question. You gave us an answer as a medical pioneer in a community setting. When you go into the Board of Regents, they're going to have to be looking at the macro issues, global, international, futuristic. If this university medical school and academic health center are going to regain its prominence, what are the one or two big issues that you think are those macro issues, and how would you bring an expertise to those?
Okay. At several levels there. Innate in that question was something of a suggestion that maybe we have lost some of the glamour that we in Minnesota have had in the past. I think I would still push for a lot more family medicine training. Every year when United Healthcare does their healthiest state kinds of things, Minnesota is right up there at the top. If you look at the ranking of states in the healthiest state thing and the number of family docs per capita, you'll find the concordance is very high. Either Minnesota or South Dakota has more family docs per capita than any other state. And they're always right up at the top of that list. So I think as far as the quality of healthcare overall being provided, we've already been doing that. Yeah, we've shown that in those studies. Are there ways to get back to the C. Walt Little High days and be pioneers in open heart surgery and so forth? I think a lot of that is going on. It's just not as classy or whatever. You don't hear as much about it. I mean, when they first started transplanting 3-pound babies with a new kidney, I mean, that was exciting and, you know, made the news. A lot of things now don't anymore. Internationally, I think we've done well. I had the opportunity 20 years ago to go to Hungary as a guest of the Hungarian government. And this was through the university, actually. It was about the time I was president of the university. And at that time, the Hungarian government was spending 36% of their healthcare dollar, or 36% of their income on healthcare. There was a 36% tax on your income to cover national health insurance. They realized that was too much. They heard about family docs in Minnesota, and or not in Minnesota, but the United States, and they decided they wanted to look into starting family practice residencies there. I was invited over there to meet with the heads of each of their specialty organizations to help develop a family practice agenda as to how they would practice family medicine there. And it worked. You know, within a year after that meeting, family practice residencies were in place. I've met some of the graduates of those Hungarian programs subsequently, and it's been a success. Do I sound like I'm really spouting off about family medicine and how great it is? Yeah, I am, I know. But it just so happened that that was something on the international scale that for them was very important. I think the care being provided there is much better now than it was 20 years ago, and it's much more cost efficient.
Thank you. Jim.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Doctor. What implications for the University of Minnesota and the EMC and University Hospital does the institutional and geographic expansion of the Mayo Clinic have?
That's a tough one.
Yes, right.
That's why we ask.
I don't so much think that's a good idea. Is there anybody here from Mayo? Especially behind me, throwing knives at me.
We want to hear.
You know, I know, and Charles Mayo, Will Mayo, they were both on the Board of Regents in the past. I know that. So, I mean, they were very supportive of the university, too. There's been, in my mind, some pressures at the Mayo to somehow keep expanding, and it bothers me. I mean, there shouldn't be a turf battle. But yet, I don't think our state should be spending millions of dollars developing Mayo Clinic ultrastructure. And, you know, yes, they're talking about building roads and things that are needed there. But doggone it, when I built my clinic, I didn't get any breaks. You know, they redid the road past my place the same year, or the same year that I built the clinic, and I got hit with full taxes for that road going past there. You know, I didn't get any breaks. Why should the Mayo Clinic?
Well, apart from that issue, and I understand your perspective, what about in terms of that growth and expansion, geographic and the like, what implications does, how should the university and its board of regents and the medical school deal with that issue? How should that be addressed and dealt with, or in what way?
In that sense, I suspect having a male sports medicine clinic in Minneapolis is fair play, so to speak. I don't think there's any way the legislature or anybody else can affect that. I suspect I have to realize that we're going to be stepping on some toes doing that. And I don't know what the university can do to change that. There are people in my practice that will not go to the Mayo Clinic ever again, not because of what they're doing in Minneapolis, but because of bad PR of the Mayo Clinic, either personally or through family members. Likewise, I have patients who would never go to the university for their own reasons also. And I think all the university can do is do as good a job as they can. How do you do that? I think the university hospital, for instance, needs to continue to fine-tune its relationship with referring physicians. I have problems a lot of times in dealing with the Mayo Clinic and getting information out of them. And the last thing I need is for a patient to come back to me several weeks after having been to one of these places, and as a doc, I don't even know what they've had done down there or why. And especially, very recently, the Mayo Clinic had sent a patient back. I still didn't have the report back, but this patient implied that the Mayo Clinic was denigrating my care. Actually, one of my colleagues' care. It wasn't my care. It was one of my colleagues' care. And I didn't have a leg to stand on because I had no idea what the patient was talking about, had no idea what the doc down there was talking about. So I think as long as the university really works on maintaining relationships with the referring docs, as long as they can be the shining light, you know, word of mouth works best. And you know, if the referring doc talks up the university, I think and that's going to bring more patients to the university than any advertising or whatever you can do.
Follow-up question.
Yep.
What did you do when you found that out?
I called a Mayo Clinic and was upset because for the last 6 months I've been trying to get onto their website where I'm supposed to be able to look at all the Mayo Clinic records. Mm-hmm. And it's still not been able to get on. So that's been going on for the last week. And that's probably the fault of their IT people more than the fault of the docs down there. And once all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, Mayo Clinic is good about eventually getting the information out. But as far as a referring doc, actually having immediate access to the information that they do down there, no, I don't have that yet.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Do you have that kind of access with the University of Minnesota when referrals are made there? Can you get on a system to get the records?
No. And I think part of it is the type of electronic medical record. You're talking about spending a bunch of dollars on a Minnesota health library, which is good. A lot of that information may be available in different areas, and a library is a good idea for pulling that all together. But the electronic medical record problem is much more difficult in that none of the computers talk to each other. I think the university is on Epic. I'm not sure. A bunch of hospitals throughout the state are. But unless I have access to Epic through my hospital, I can't access those programs.
Jerry?
Maybe a little bit different. I want to go back to a comment you made in your opening statement. When asked about why you would want to be a regent, you mentioned, I'm not sure I got the terminology right, you mentioned the university being a jewel, and you want to be able to continue to polish the jewel. How would you do that?
Good question.
I think President Kaler certainly needs to be running the organization, but the regents need to be an overseer, trying to keep the university on track, put it that way. I'm not sure that the Mayo Clinic analogy fits, but we need to look at the state's perception of the university and whether we're getting our dollars worth, $150 a month worth out of it. There have been issues in the past with the athletic programs. Back when Bill Musselman was a coach, not so long ago, incident over in Wisconsin. And those are incidents that are very publicized and bring disgrace to the university. And we need to, I think, as a Board of Regents, do what we can to make sure the mentality is right in the athletic programs, but also throughout the university, that some of those things just can't happen. And, can we polish the appearance of the university, the jewel called the university? In other ways, can we bring world-renowned medical or other researchers to Minnesota to improve our jewel that way? Sure. I didn't have any other specific suggestions other than it's something we need to keep doing.
Thank you.
Polishing your image.
Any other questions? Doctor, your closing statement.
Well, they didn't say I could have a closing statement, so I don't know. There's a number of other issues I thought about there, and I'm glad nobody asked me about diversity because that's a tough one. And Norwood Teague became athletic director, 2-3 years ago? And the day after he started, he was at a fundraiser in Alexandria for the Minnesota Golden Dunkers. And I happened to be there playing golf with some of these basketball players. And I told him, I'm going to retire one of these days. And I happen to be the captain of my hospital's basketball team. But I was thinking, if I ended up retiring, I'd maybe go back to the university and start taking some classes. And I wanted to know if I was welcome to try out for the Gophers. And he said, frankly, Doc, I think your NCAA eligibility ran out several decades ago. And fun story, but
They're discriminating against me. Do we take the Board of Regents, go to the NCAA, and say we're offended that this old guy wants to try out for the Gophers and you won't let him? Is that discrimination? I don't know. And there's a lot of things like that where sometimes there are reasons people are excluded. You know, if I'm excluded because I can shoot three-pointers but I can't dribble, that's one thing. If I'm excluded only because of age, you know, that's another. I don't know that specifically Richard Pitino would want to see me on his court anyhow. My legs aren't that good looking. But there's a lot of issues with diversity, and I guess over the years I've tried to maintain diversity on my hospital basketball team. We even have several wrestlers on our basketball team. And we actually won a game a couple weeks ago, which was good. Diversity should happen on its own. Dr. Bakke, some 30 or 40 years ago, sued the Mayo Clinic when he was not admitted to medical school. And they claim he was not admitted to medical school because he was white. They put somebody in medical school who was not a white male or whatever. And he won. And he eventually got into medical school and so forth. So there's all those kinds of things we try to do to provide opportunities. I think my own experience is such that I grew up on a farm. We were poverty stricken. We didn't know it. I mean, we did fine. But the university provided the opportunities for me to become who I became over the last 50 years with the university. And I think anything we can do to provide opportunities for people that feel they want a particular opportunity, more power to them. You know, it doesn't matter who they are. If they want the opportunity at the university, let's do what we can to offer them that opportunity.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you all. Thank you all for serving.